It's not happening. Okay. But, so yesterday at the end of this year, I quoted from the Rambam, but I figured that it makes more sense to read it inside. Now, the Rambam reconciles the halakha, the notion of that the Talmud Chacham is no keim and benotzer kenachash, then nonetheless a person should attach themselves to the Talmud Chacham. So we pointed out that this was did not mean that this Talmud Chacham necessarily was violating an isser, even though from the Lashon of Rashi, who was it who pointed out from the Lashon of Rashi that it seemed a little bit like he was saying, despite the fact that he's not coming out to Kanata, she'll still learn a lot from his Talmud Torah, that maybe he's actually violating the Yisr. But from the Gemara Yuma and Daf Chav Gimel, which tries to reconcile this statement about Talmud Chacham, is not Timinokhesh, Minot came Kanakash, it appears that it was understood that there are some circumstances where it could be legitimate. So the actual Lashon of Rambam, this is at the very conclusion of Pilchos Talmud Torah, the end of Perek Zayin, Halacha Yud Gimel. So the Rambam says, V'cheina, that that even though a Talmud Chacham has a right to put somebody in Nidoy, if they are Mezalzel in the cover of the Talmud Chacham, nonetheless, it's not Roy, it's Eino Sheva for Talmud Chacham, La'anik Esas V'Vidav Ezeh, that it's better to just turn the other way. They would hear their bizayin and they wouldn't respond. And they would even be mochel. Then the Rambam goes on to say, even though this is the Derech Shal Tamid Chacham Shavoy Leilech Bava Medrim Amurim, what are we talking about? That's if it was done privately, but if there was a Bizayin HaTorah, but Tamid Tamid Chacham Shabizeu, Ocherfu Adam Befrahesya, but if it was a public embarrassment, also Lo Limchol Al Kiboto, Bimachol Nena, she can't be Mochel Mipnei Shezeh Bizayin Torah, because that's a Bizayin Torah. Elenokem Minotem Adavah Kenachash, so that's where he quotes this Lashon, that he should be no keminotzer kenachash, ashi ivakish menu mechila v'yislach lo, until the person is mefayis, that's the Lashon of the Gemara Yuma, until he's mefayis the Talmud Chacham, so then he doesn't have to be no keminotzer anymore. So the diuk of the Lashon that we mentioned yesterday is that it doesn't say Talmud Chacham should be zeo ocherfu another Talmud Chacham. It says Talmud Chacham should be zeo ocherfu other before Hesya, indicating that when is it a true, when is it going to cause kavod, more kavod HaTorah, when the Talmud Chacham responds by being notem v'nokem kenachash, that's when it was, it's not going to cause a fight with another Talmud Chacham. It's a Stam Adam who was mezalzel in Torah. So then it'll be more of a kavod HaTorah if you stand up for Torah. But if it's another Talmud Chacham, so then that's just going to cause more of a mechava nowadays, where people can dispute over who's a Talmud Chacham and who's not. It's probably always going to cause more of a bizayin HaTorah. So that's just a further elucidation of what we ended up saying at the end of the Chabur yesterday. Okay, so today's daf is what? Samach Dalet. So at the conclusion of Daf Samach Dalet, but love getting to Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. So the conclusion of Samach Dalet Amud Beis, a lot of Tumah V'Tahor Inyanim with Samach Dalet Amud Aleph. It's very interesting, but it's not so much Halacha L'Maaseh. So on the Amud Beis, we have a discussion about Mari Zayim. Mari Zayim means that sometimes something can be permissible, but because it looks like you're doing an Isser, you should stay away from doing it anyway. The Gemara quotes Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, the principle of Rav. Kol makom she'asu chachamim mipnei Mari Zayim, anything which was prohibited because that it's going to appear that the person was doing an Isser, even though they're doing something which is really mutter, afilu b'chadri chadari maser, that's going to be prohibited even b'chadri chadari. So the Gemara asks a little bit on the principle of Rav, that it says, Tanan, the Mishnah says, V'lo b'zug, that as far as the animal shouldn't hear a bell, al kishapakuk, even though it's closed up, it won't make a noise. B'tanya idach, then we have a brisa that said, why is it that you shouldn't do it? Because people will think that you're taking the animal to the marketplace, and that it's going to be Mexican, mishum de mexi, ka'azil l'chinga. That's what the Gemara said, to explain this halacha, that it looks like you're taking the animal to the marketplace. So what's the problem of taking the animal to the marketplace? If you take animal to the marketplace, then the idea would be that you're going to be engaged in mekach u'memker. The you take an animal to the market in order to sell an animal, so you're not allowed to engage in commerce on Shabbos. Is that an issa d'oraisa or is it an issa d'rabbanan? That's an issa d'rabbanan, right? That engaging in commerce on Shabbos is an issa d'rabbanan. Shemi yaptov, maybe you're going to come to write, so it's a somi d'rabbanan, it's an issa. And because we're worried about the Mari Sa'ai, and even if that is a Midrabanon, that's why it's prohibited for an animal to go out with a zug, with a bell, even though it is pakuk. So that's what the Mishnah says on Nundal and Amabes, and that's what the Gemara says by way of explanation of why it is that it is prohibited. So even though the Mishnah there says that it's prohibited, there's still a brisa that says that you're allowed to do this if you're staying within the confines of a chatzir. As long as it's in a private courtyard, shall we say, so then it's permissible. So here we see that something that was prohibited because of Mari Sa'ayin is in fact permitted in Bechadre Chadarim. So the Gemara answers Tanayi. So it's a machlokis, Tanayim, whether we would prohibit something Bechadre Chadarim or not. In other words, the halacha of Rav is a machlokis tanayim. Where do we see this machlokis tanayim? The Tanya, the price it says, shotkan bechama, that if a person's clothes got wet, then he's allowed to put them up but to dry if it's in the sun, because he didn't do kibbutz, he didn't cause them, he didn't launder them on Shabbos, of lo keneged am, but it shouldn't be in front of everybody. If it's in front of everybody, that's not bechadri chadarim, that's going to be a problem of Mari Sa'ayin. So that Tana seems to hold that we do draw a distinction between Chadri Chadarim, it's not going to be a problem of Mari Sa'ayin, but if it's Keneged Am, so then it is a problem of Mari Sa'ayin. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon say, no, you're not allowed to do it all together. Why aren't you allowed to do it all together? So presumably they would hold like the principle of Rab, their Shita is in accordance with the principle of Rab, that that this could be prohibited even bechadre chadarim. So that's a question. So how do we paskin lahalacha? Do we paskin that it's whatever is asr even bechadre chadarim? So Tosfos in Ksubos and Dav Samech articulates a klal. The Gemara there talks about unstuffing a clogged pipe on top of a roof. That got clogged up with rocks and pebbles and various pieces of dirt. So a person can unclog it with his feet, kala'acha yad. So that's only misakin kala'acha yad, which is makes it only a midrabanan. And mamakom hefsei, that if it stays clogged up, so all the water is good, if it's raining, all the water is going to go from the roof into the house instead of going onto the yard. So in order to avoid the hefsei, so we would permit this action to be performed, but the Gemara only permits it bitzina. So Tosa says, why is it only permitted bitzina? So it's only permitted bitzina because this is only an issa d'rabbanan. It's only an issa d'rabbanan because it's misakin kala'acha yad. And therefore, if it's done bitzina / bechadre chadarim, it's being done privately, that would be permissible. But if it's not done bitzina, if it's done for esya, then we would have to prohibit it because of the Mari Sa'ayin, that it looks like the person is doing something which is prohibited. It looks like it's a molacha. So Tosa says that the principle of Rav, that kol ma she'asu chachamim b'nei Mari Sa'ayin afilu bechadre chadarim asur, is only applicable to something which is an iser de'araisa, but not an iser de'rabbanan. So that's how Tosfos gets at it. Tosfos says, really, we paskin like Rav, but if it is an iser de'rabbanan, so then it would be permissible if it is bechadre chadarim. And the Beis Yosef brings this Tosfos at the end of Simen Kuf Lamed Vav in Shulchan Aruch, where this particular halakha from the Gemara in Ksubos about unstuffing the clogged pipe is quoted la halakha, and the Beis Yosef says that we really hold Mir Geradin like this shita. So if that is the case, then the Magen Avraham asks in Simen Shin Aleph of Sif Gatan Nun Vav, the Magen Avraham asks, so shouldn't we not then have, according to Tosfos, given that teretz in this Gemara, we could have said that the whole issur of the animal going to wearing the zug is that the people are going to say, oh, it's going out in the public street, so it must be that he's taking the animal to the marketplace, so that's only an issur d'rabbanan. So that could be the explanation of the contradiction between the halakha, that normally the animal can't go out in public because we're worried, the azog, the chimta, you're going to sell him. That's a mari sa'ayin or an issur d'rabbanan, but we understand the halakha of mitayim lima bechatzer, because that's a case of which is bechadrei fadarim, that's in the sinner, that's in private, and the only isser that would potentially be involved over here would be an isser of would be an isser derabanan, in which case we can understand the distinction between these two halakhos. So the Magen Avraham concludes, he says that it must be that even though the Gemara in Shabbos, in our Gemara, doesn't give that teretz, Tosfos in Ksuvos is of the opinion that our Gemara is nitre mipnei ha-Gemara in Ksuvos. That the Iker Gemara is the Gemara in Ksuvos that draws this distinction within an Issa Drabbanan. Once you have that Gemara in Ksuvos, really, and assuming that we would paskin that way, then we really could draw that distinction la-halacha. In fact, if you look in Siman Shin Aleph, we paskin this way la-halacha. La-halacha, we paskin that if the zug is put into the animal only in a chatzir, so then that would be permissible. So that's understandable based on this distinction which is drawn between an issa d'oraisa and an issa d'rabbanan, that we don't worry about chadri chadarim if we're only dealing with an issa d'rabbanan. Tosfos on Samach Hayam and Aleph has another limitation with respect to the principle of apilu b'chadri chadarim asur. Tosfos there says that it's only applicable if the same shash that would apply if people saw the person doing the action in public and they think that the person violated some sort of an isser, that when they do it in private, they would think that the person violated the same isser. So if a person saw somebody laundering in public, then or hanging up wet clothes, they might think they did kippus on Shabbos. And if a person sees it, this person hanging up wet clothes privately on Shabbos, so they might think that they did kippus on Shabbos. So there, you know, you might have the same concern in both places. And kippus, of course, is an issa d'oraisa, which is why we would understand that, you know, in that particular halacha, there would be room to be machmir. But you know, in the case where there's the machlokis between the Tanakama of the Brisa and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon of the Brisa on the top of Samachay and Manalev. But Tosfos brings the case on Kulin that says Ain Shelton the Soguma Rishus Arabim, that a person is not allowed to shelt into a hole in Rishus Arabim, because that was a manner of avoda that was done for avoda zara. So Yachak Apikorsim, the Apikorsim shouldn't think that the person is involved in performing avoda zara. Bachatzim Mutter. So how is it? Why is it Bachatzim Mutter? This zikr should be a case that we should say according to Rab that Bechadri Chadarim is usher as well. So Tosa says, no, in this particular case, somebody, even if a person would see the person do it in their chatzir, they would say, lenaker chatzir utzara, that the reason why he's shefting into the hole in his chatzir, as opposed to just letting all the blood fall over his courtyard, is because he wants to keep his yard clean. If he did it for Rishus Arabim, so somebody wouldn't have that taina. Why would the person has no interest in keeping the Rishus Arabim clean? It's not, you know, his property. But if the person is actually shefting into his property, so then there's a svara that the person, somebody, an onlooker, would not think he was committing an issa. They would say, yeah, of course, this is the natural and normal thing to do, that the person wants to be able to keep his courtyard clean. So whenever you have that type of a svara, where the reaction of an onlooker would be very different in a Rishus HaYachid type of circumstance than in a, or an Etzina type of circumstance than in a Parhesia type of circumstance, so that's another case where the principle of Rav would not apply, even if under normal circumstances we would assume that the principle of Rav would apply. Now the Mincha Shlomo, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, it turns around the principle of Rav, and he says, assuming that unless we have, you know, one of these exceptions, the principle of Rav would normally apply. What are the exceptions? The one exception that we stated is that maybe it doesn't apply to an issa d'rabbanan. The second exception we had is the exception of Tosfos that appears both here in Gemara Kulin, which is that if in the circumstance of private, of the private place, an onlooker would not think that the person was committing an issa, because the very fact of the private location causes a different, more favorable interpretation of the action. So, but normally, we would say that anything which is asur mishum ma'arisa ayin, if we didn't have one of those exceptions, apilu b'chadrei chadarim asur, right? So we know that in the principles of logic, that if a statement is true, then its contrapositive is true as well, right? So we say, if it's asur because of ma'arisa ayin, then you know, even b'chadrei chadarim, it would be asur. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach argues, this is in Chelek Beis the Gimel of Ishayas the Jewish, the posthumously published Jewish in Simonim Gimel. So he says, so too, If, since we say the statement is that if the something is also because of Marisayin, then even Mechadim Chadarim is also. So if I said if something is Mutter Mechadim Chadarim, then even in public it must be Mutter. So that's how he kind of turns around the principle of Rav. So he says, what's the case that he's dealing with? The case is if somebody is a Chola in Yom Kippur and they have to wear leather shoes. Because if they're Chola, they're obligated to wear leather shoes. So he says that since we're going, so the question was that, yes, the halakha is that a Chola is allowed to wear the leather shoes, but maybe he shouldn't wear it in public because of Maris Ayin. So he says, no, since we're going to permit it, Bechadrei Chadarim, so once we permit it, Bechadrei Chadarim, so therefore it should be mutter, even Bereshus Harabim as well. He says that you should try to minimize it because of Lazus Rasayim, but really, technically speaking, it would be mutter, since once it's permitted, once we permit it, Bechadrei Chadarim, so then it would be permissible under those circumstances, Bereshus Harabim as well. Kind of just an interesting application of turning around the principle. Now, there is a famous Rama in Hilchos Basa V'Cholov in Siman Pei Zayin. How many of you have learned Yoredeya already? Okay, so there's a famous Rama, right? The Rama talking at the very beginning of Hilchos Basa V'Cholov. So Rama talks about what if I have almond milk on a table, right? I mean, now almond milk has become much more popular. We have lots of almond milk now that we buy from the store. So the question is that if I have almond milk at the table, it's parah. But it's a meal of a meat, and there might be a marisayin. People think that if you have the milk on the table, they won't know that it's parah. They'll think that you're eating basar v'chalav. So the Rama draws a distinction. He says that if you're eating basar behema, which is asa midaraisa with chalav, so then you can't have the almond milk on the table unless you have some sort of a hecker. You have the bottle next to it, the container that says, oh, you whatever parah. This is almond milk, so people see that it's almond milk. But if it's you're just eating chicken, and the yisra basa of the chalav is only midrabanan. So since it's only midrabanan, so then you don't have to worry. So the shach asks, what do you mean you don't have to worry? We find in our Gemara that we're worried about marisayin, even on isuri drabanan. The distinction Tosfos drew between chadri chadarim and public was a distinction within isuri drabanan to say that if it's an isra drabanan, so we're only worried in public, but not in private. However, he doesn't wipe out marisayin altogether with respect to an issa drabanan. So how can the Rama say that just because it's an issa drabanan, we're not going to worry about marisayin? So he quotes our Gemara with respect to the behemo. Can't go out in public with a zug around its neck, even though it's closed up, because we're worried that it's going to go out l'chinaga, and the only issa we're worried about is maso matan, which is an issa drabanan, nonetheless it's prohibited. So how can the Rama say that this is permissible? So he said it can't be. It can't be permissible. So the Piskei Tshuva jumps to the defense of the Rama and says that the Rama must be talking about this very distinction that we articulated. He must be talking about when a person's in the privacy of their home. It's not a Suda Gedola where the entire world has been invited. It's just him and his wife or whatever. They both know what's going on. So since this basically is a Chadrei Chadarim case, and we're only dealing with an Issa Drabanan, and that's the reason why the Rama was Mati. But in Achinami, if we would be dealing with a Suda Gedola, if it would be a giant feast for a lot of people, and then I would have more of a Farhesia concern, and there's a concern about Marisayin on an Issa Drabanan level. So in that case, in Achinami, the Rama would agree that it would be prohibited. And the Pri Chadosh, in a very interesting comment, says, who says, when it comes to the Issur Marisayin, so it's better when we're dealing with Issuri Drabanan, there are various places in the Gemara where the Chazal indicated that we're worried about Marisayin even on an Issur Drabanan, but it doesn't mean that we should be Nedam Milsel and Milsel, that we should come up on our own and say every single time that there's an Issur Drabanan, we should be worried about Marisayin. Whenever the Chachamim specifically goes there, an Issur, a Marisayin prohibition with respect to an Issur Drabanan, so then we have to worry about Marisayin. But if there's some other area where we don't find that Chazal specifically said that we have to worry about Marisayin on an Issur Drabanan, so for those Issuri Drabanan, we don't have to worry about Marisayin. So the Pri Chadosh justifies the Sifkat and Zion and Siman Pei Zion justifies the psak of the Rama, even Kipshuto, even assuming that we're not talking about a Suda Ketan, even be a Suda Gedola. He says that he thinks that in this particular case there never was a Gezeira Mari Zion on this particular Drabanan. Yes?
So Mincha Shlomo would kind of go against the Rama?
The Mincha Shlomo, not necessarily, meaning that it's hard to figure out how you would apply the Mincha Shlomo. I mean, if we would say that principle, it would only be true with respect to those cases where it would follow that if A, then B. So it would only be a siri d'oraisa, right? Technically speaking, it should really only be applicable to isuri d'oraisa, not to isuri d'rabbanan. The Ramah said that if I'm worried about it, mari sayin for isuri d'oraisa, then for sure you're not allowed to have the almond milk on the table unless you have the container, you have the almonds nearby to show that the milk came from the almonds. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a couple of places, has a big chiddush about the whole concept of Mari Zion. Once we're talking about Mari Zion in general, so Rav Moshe Feinstein, he has this in Igros Moshe, Manoach Chaim, Pelek Beis Simon Mem, and a couple of other places as well, but it's clearly articulated over there. He holds that there are really two different Yisurim included within Mari Zion. One is what we call Mishum Kshat. There are lots of things that you're not allowed to do. You walk into an area where there's a path that leads to an avodah zara, and it'll look like you're going into an avodah zara, so you shouldn't walk on that path. That's avodah zara daf yudalef. He said, and the Gemara there says mishum kshat, because they were worried people will think that you're actually going to be ovid avodah zara. So he says that's mishum kshat. That's something which is based on the pasuk in the Torah, v'yisem nikiyam me'ashem v'yisrael. But then, in addition to that, there's also what he calls pure Mari Zion. It's like a pure Mari Zion that's not even Kshat. What's the pure Mari Zion? It's the pure Mari Zion is that people are going to think that that it's okay to do something because of the fact that you did it, so they're going to learn from you to do it as well. So he holds that that's sort of the second aspect of Mari Zion. Now, it appears from many of the places in the Gemara where we see the term Mari Zion employed, that Mari Zion is sort of synonymous or equivalent to this notion of Mishum Kshat, that people will be suspicious that you're doing the Aveira. But Rav Moshe claims that no, sometimes the Gemara says Mishum Kshat. When the Gemara doesn't say Mishum Kshat, it says Mari Zion, so Mari Zion also indicates this other element, that people are going to think that you yourself, that people will learn from you, and we'll think that, oh, since he did it, therefore it's okay to do. So he claims that there might be certain situations where you don't have to worry about shot, that and people will, like if you have, you know, multiple things going in a particular derech, that people won't worry that you might be ovid avodah zara, such an issel chomer. So if there's any justification, a person might think, oh, he's going to the other place, he's not going to be ovid avodah zara, so then you don't have to worry about shot. But even in those types of cases where you don't have to worry about shad, sometimes you have to worry about Mari Zion. Sometimes people won't be close to you. They'll just want to be more ahead to say, oh, something's not so bad. It's not a shad. They think that it's everybody should do it. They say, oh, look, even Plony is doing it, therefore I'll do it as well. He asks this in the context of a tshuva over there about whether it's mutter to daven in sort of a side minyan in a temple, which is a non-Orthodox temple with this mixed seating and so forth. And they have one little minion there, which is an Orthodox shul. And people will see you walking into the shul. So the one big shot, anybody who will think that it's a bad thing will think, oh, if he's going in there, so he's not going into the bad minion. He's not going into the improper minion, but he's going into the proper minion with a mechitza. However, he says there's still the problem of what he calls pure Mari Zion. People will say, okay, we're not kosher him, but we think it's an okay thing to do. And if he went in, so we're going to assume that he went into that place because it's really legitimate to go into a place of mixed eating, and we're going to assume, and we're going to conclude from him that he does it, so it's not so bad if we do it as well. So he says that you always have to calibrate sort of both of these dual aspects of Mari Zion. One, the shad concern of Mari Zion based on Yisem Nekiyah Me'ashem Yisrael, and two, the learning from your actions aspect of Mari Zion. The people will see that you're doing something or interpret what you're doing a certain way and think that it's okay for them to do it as well. This is a bit of a chiddush to introduce sort of this other element of Mari Zion, which doesn't seem to naturally flow so obviously from the sugyas that we've seen so far with respect to Mari Zion, but that's a running theme within the shuvas of Rav Moshe. He has a lengthy tshuva about it, having to do with the Ishus Chomiv, but that's a more complex analysis. Yeah. So these are the types of issues. So he says that, you know, he talks about what if somebody has to go into they're really starving, and they want to go into a restaurant that serves non-kosher things, but they're only going to eat the kosher things in the restaurant. So he says, if a person's really, really starving, then it can be presumed that the that anyone who sees them in the restaurant who sees him will see that he's only eating the kosher things. But he should make sure that there's nobody outside of the restaurant, because anybody who's outside of the restaurant who sees him going in won't realize that he's only going in to eat the kosher things. I used to say when I was working in the in my law firm, so sometimes we would have to go to non-kosher restaurants. So first of all, it was much better to go to a completely non-kosher restaurant than to a questionably, supposedly kosher restaurant, because you're working for a supposedly kosher restaurant, so people will think that this is the flip side of what, the second side of what Ramosha was saying. Wouldn't be a shot. They would say, oh, I guess it's okay, because look, so-and-so is going in and eating in this restaurant. I guess the hashkafa is good after all. So that was much more problematic. I thought it was less problematic to walk into a completely non-kosher restaurant, because then it would be a shot. If I took off my yarmulke, then it would be a shot. People would say, oh, look, he's giving up his religion, and he's just going to eat the trepas. But if you walk in with a business suit, so people understand that for business purposes, you have to go places, and you're wearing your yarmulke, then the assumption would be that you're not so brazen to walk in with a yarmulke to a non-kosher restaurant to eat non-kosher food. Everybody knows. I think that when you walk into, that sometimes from people have to go into non-kosher restaurants and they sit around sipping Coca-Cola. So that's what I would do. I would walk in with my yarmulke when I had to go, and I would sip a Coca-Cola without a limit. Yes?
Okay, two things. First of all, can you explain the logic behind the Minchas Shlomo again? What do you say if something is usser and mardine?
Well, if I start off with the proposition, and this is a logical principle, okay? A statement doesn't imply the inverse of the converse, but implies it's contrapositive. If I say, if A, then B, so then that implies, if not B, then not A. It's just, it's an axiom. It's, a tautology of sort that it kind of goes together. I mean, it's just like if A, then B, so, it doesn't mean if B, then A, but it does mean that if not B, then not A. Well, once I make that absolute statement, if it's always true that if A, then B, then it's always going to be true if not B, then not A.
Okay. Also, in that situation which you spoke about, would it make more sense if you were in a place where you assume most people, you wouldn't know anyone there, wouldn't it be better to take off your yarmulke, because then people see you going inside, they won't think that there's a Jew going into a non-kosher.
No, because somebody who knows you might see you.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you're in a place where no one knows you, but there could be Jews outside.
I think that you're just safer, because this way, whether nobody knows you or everybody knows you, if they see you walking with a yarmulke, you're fine. If nobody knows you, what difference does it make? And if they
see a Jew going into
if it's a non-kosher restaurant, so the only issue really is shot. It's not that nobody's going to learn that it's okay to eat trade. They might learn that it's okay to rely upon a questionable hashkacha. If you walk into that type of restaurant, that's much more problematic. That's much more problematic. Okay, so related directly to this whole sugya of Mari Zion is another discussion that flows from today's daf. It's a very important discussion, and that comes from the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about how a woman's allowed to go out with like a little ribbon around her hair, and then it goes on to say that she's also allowed to wear a peah nakris in a chatzir. She's allowed to wear what sounds like a wig into a chatzir. So that sounds like she can wear a wig. It sounds like a woman's allowed to wear a sheitel. So you say, no, maybe it's not. It doesn't mean that you can get away with a sheitel. Maybe it's talking about a single woman. So you say, no. Because the Gemara says that only the things that a woman couldn't wear in a Rishus HaRabim, she's only allowed to wear a couple of things in a Chatzir. That was the Shita of Rab that we quoted a little while ago. So that's in this daf. So Rab says, Kol she'asu chacham latzeisbo Rishus HaRabim, also latzeisbo l'chatzir, chutz mikbu peah nakris, except for this hairnet and this and a sheitel. So it sounds like sheitel. So why is it only these particular items? So Varab Maishnahani asked the Gemara a little later down. So I'm going to look at this Shaltiskana Baila, so that she shouldn't be revolting to her husband, because you might have a woman who doesn't. So Rashi says, that we permit her to wear some, just a few items, just so that she shouldn't be repulsive to her husband. So we're talking about a married woman, and we see that a married woman is allowed to wear a peah nakris. So the Shilte HaGibarim, very famously or infamously, depending on your perspective, on this particular on our Gemara, says we see from here that it's perfectly permissible under normal circumstances for a woman to wear a panocris, that you don't have to worry about that there's an issue of Sarvi Isha Erba, that as long as it's not directly clung to her, the hair is not her own hair which is clung to her skull, but rather it's detached from her skull. He goes so far to say even if it's her own hair, it was cut off her hair and then you made it into a shetel, that would be okay. But he says, that as long as the hair has been detached from her head, if it's her hair or somebody else's hair, and now it's reattached to her head. So he says that we see from here that it's perfectly permissible for a woman to be adorned with a peah nakris. This is found on which dapim of the Rif. I'll give you the page. It's right here on dap chuf tes amud aleph in the dapim of the Rif. That he says is perfectly permissible from that which we see from our Gemara, and the argument that he says is that it's mashu lehedyash mutaris minos yisal diskashi behen the sar beisha erva the kama lo abe lebesira besara adavuk lebesara mamish. Only if the hair is actually attached to her head, but otherwise it's not going to be a problem of Sabi Isha Erba, Begav Lo Mishum Pruas Rosh, and it's not, the woman's not going to be considered to be Pruas Rosh, and we see from here that it is perfectly okay. So that's the big chiddush of the Shilte HaGibar. The Tiferes Yisrael, the Mishnayos and the Yachin Uboah says the opposite. He says it's not true. He says that normally we don't permit a woman to go out wearing a peah nachris. And the Haraya that Tosas asked the Kasha on Daf Nun Zayin. On Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, Tosas asks, why is it that when our Mishnah talks about what could be worn in the Chatzur that can't be worn in the Rishus HaRabim, so it indicates you could wear a peah nachris and a kibbutz. But when the Mishnah spoke about what you couldn't wear in a Rishus HaRabim, on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, it only mentioned this kibbutz, but it didn't mention the peah nachris. So Tosfos asked the question, and Dibor Amaskil, E kabla of the Tanan, Toma Milo Tani Nami Beresha Peah Nachris Badi Kvul Daniel Sibada Rishus Harabim. So Tosfos gives an answer, and the Pharisee Saul says, because you shouldn't think that the only reason why you can't wear a Peah Nachris in a Rishus Harabim is because it's some sort of a hotzah on Shabbos, or worried that she's gonna it's part of the gzera of a woman not wearing tachshit in Rishus Harabim on Shabbos. It's not stated because it's also for other reasons, because of tznius, because of fuas rosh, because of sabi sheva, that a peah nachris is not an acceptable head covering for a woman to wear ever in public. So that's why it's not stated in the Mishnah on Zayin Amud Aleph. So why then should it even be permissible in a chatzir? So he says, it's talking about a chatzir, shein bokim barabim. It's talking about a chatzir, which is not a place where people come publicly. It's a private courtyard, but if it would be a public place, so then a woman's never allowed to go in a privately, fine, in her own home. In a private courtyard, she can wear a peah nachris. She can get away with a sheitel. If she's going to go out in public at all amongst people, so then she's not allowed to wear a sheitel. So this machlokis is very much still alive and well to this very day. So Mishnah Berurah and Simonai and Hay, commenting on the halakha there brought by the Ramah. The Ramah says it's mutzah to be say Kriya Shema in front of a woman with a sheitel. So he quotes the Magen Avraham, who assumes, why is it mutter? It's mutter, this seems to be reflected in the comments of the Ramah and the Daf Moshe elsewhere. It's mutter based on the Shilte HaGibarim. It's mutter because we hold that fundamentally it's permissible for a woman to wear a peah nachris. But there were those who disagreed with the Shilte HaGibarim. The most notable detractor was the Tshuvas Be'er Sheva, which is cited in by the Mishnah Berurah. And the Tshuvas Be'er Sheva, he says, a little bit like the Tiferes he saw, number one, We're talking about only in a chatzah shein boken bo rabim. And number two, he claims this pei anachris isn't a regular sheito. This pei anachris was for a woman who didn't have a lot of hair. She, for whatever reason, her hair was falling off, so she had to supplement the hair that she had. And then, in addition to that supplement of her hair, she also puts an additional head covering on top of all of that. But it's not talking about where she's only going out with the pei anachris alone. So he brings the Tiferes Yisrael's explanation, plus he throws in one on her, of his own, that we're not talking about where the only covering on her head is the pei anachris. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that the Magid Avraham understands that the Ramah is possibly like the Shilta Yagibarim, and he says that, you know, Meyikara did. That seems that is essentially the halacha. However, he says that, he quotes a Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim says that if it's a place where there would be a Mari Sayin, so here we get back to the Mari Sayin Sigur. So he says, if it's a place where there would be a Mari Sayin, that, that people would not know that the woman was covering her hair. It's a place where maybe lots of people don't cover their hair, where the women aren't so tzinuous. They'll think that she's one of those women who are not tzinuous. So then there might be room to be machmir, not to wear a sheitel. So somebody asked this question also of Rav Moshe Feinstein. This is in Eben Ezer Chelek Beis, I think Siman Yud Aleph. And somebody asked whether they had a right because they wanted to be among the machmirim. Like the Be'er Sheva, like the Tiferes Yisrael, like the Yabbits, he wanted to be amongst the Machmirim, not to allow his wife to wear a sheitel. And Rav Moshe said to him that it's clear from the Gemara that the Gemara permits wearing a sheitel, and it must be that. He quotes our Gemara that seems to indicate that it's perfectly fine. And secondly, he says, if you're worried about Mari Zion, he doesn't think Mari Zion is applicable to wearing a sheitel altogether. Why is that? So he brings yet another possible exception to the Mari Zion rule. And he says, Mari Zion only applies to Isurim. Wearing a sheitel is based on a mitzvah's essay. That this mitzvah's essay was based on a notion of an essay that a woman is supposed to be at Tznua. Since the woman's supposed to be at Tznua, therefore, it's not appropriate for her to go out with her head uncovered. He says that's not an isser per se, it's an essay. So since it's an essay, we don't find that there's a notion of Mari Sa'ayin necessarily with respect to essays. And he says for most of the time as well, it's pretty obvious when somebody's wearing a sheitel. He says, yeah, it's true that men are clueless in general. They don't know what they're looking at. So men, you know, never know how to interpret, you know, what they're looking at. But the women who are usually the most frequently found amongst other women, so they know when their friends are wearing sheitels. The women are able to tell when it's a sheitel. Since the women are able to tell that it's a sheitel, he says it doesn't matter if sometimes the man is not able to tell that it's a sheitel. Therefore, he says that he asks the, I don't know how well he knew the person who asked the shaitel, he says, and I bet that you shave sometimes. And when people see that you go out shaving, so why isn't there a Mari Zion that maybe used a real razor? You know, can anybody really tell that it was an electric shaver, not a regular razor that you used, and you're going out shaving? So how is it? So how could you have a double standard? That on the one hand, you're not worried about the Mari Zion that you're going around shaving, and then you're going to impose upon your wife that she can't wear a shaitel because you're worried about the Mari Zion. So therefore, he says that he thinks that it would be improper for him to be mocheh on his wife in any way. He says it's her mitzvah, not yours. He throws them that for good measure. And he says that he shouldn't be mocheh, that his wife relies upon, and she is covering her hair, and she's relying upon those who say that it's an appropriate covering to cover one's head with a pei anachris. However, you should know, Rav Avadya Yosef is very much against the idea of wearing a sheitel. He has a tshuva in a chelek hei of his tshuvas in Eben Ezer, Simen Hei, in which he goes on in great length quoting the various shitos and saying that he thinks that you do have to worry about, you know, all of these different inyanim. You have to worry about the Mari Zion, especially in a door where there might be a lot of putzos, so you have to worry about the Mari Zion. And he also thinks that when people are wearing sheitels that are so fancy and so nice, who says that Sarav Yishayavar doesn't only apply if the head is actually clinging to the, if the hair is actually clinging to the head. He's not so convinced of the approach of the Shilta Yagibarim, and he points out that although there were those who thought, the Shilta Yagibarim was such an early authority, and the Be'er Sheva was a so much later authority, and who gave the Be'er Sheva the right to take issue or exception with the Shelti Agibarim. He says it's not true. If you look at the historical record, the Be'er Sheva was the Talmud of the Lubush. He was also pretty early on, just right after the Shelti Agibarim, and he had the right to take issue with the Shelti Agibarim. So the one concession that he's prepared to grant is that that he says that he thinks that if it's a woman who is an Amana or a Grusha, so if it's an Amana or a Grusha, where the whole thing would be more on a Darabanan level, more on a Das Yehudis level, that we would be prohibitive of her wearing a of her uncovering her hair, since it's only on a Darabanan level anyway. So therefore, he's more inclined to be permissive with respect to them wearing a Peah Nachris. So he says, so if it's an Amana or a Grusha, he has a separate Shub in Chelek Dalet, where he holds that given the Shelti Agibarim and given that it's only Drabbanan, so just like it would be permissible in a Chatzer Shein Bokim Bo Rabim, because in a Chatzer it's on a lesser level of stringency, so too with respect to a Grusha and Amana, it's on a lesser level of stringency. But clearly, Rav Moshe writes very clearly that he thinks Sheitel is permissible, and the Mincha Shlomo writes similarly. There's an interesting lashon in the Mincha Shlomo. I'm not sure if I wrote it down, but when he's talking about this issue of Mari Zion, he says that Bechoshveni. Yeah, I did write it down. He says that he thinks that there's not a problem of Mari Zion, even if occasionally you can't tell that it's a Sheitel. He says, V'choshveni, sh'smuchin al zeh sh'rov anashim yodim b'zeh lahavchin, that we rely upon the fact that most people are able to tell the difference. Av she'habe pa'amim, ani eineni yodea lahavdil. Even though many times I really can't tell the difference, but even though he personally many times can't tell the difference, since most people can't tell the difference between a Sheitel and regular hair, therefore, he doesn't think that it's a problem of Mari Zion, and one could be someich on the shita of the Shelti Agibarim to allow a woman to wear a sheitel as a way of covering her hair. Okay, any questions?
Yeah. With the sheitel, if it's synthetic hair, I assume that the root that probably part was his,
I would think so. I would think that would make it even better, but I don't know. This one has to be machlim for regular hair.